Eternal return. So she took a lover, or did the lover take her? Isn't truth overrated anyway? So many years passed between then and now. The painting in the attic, old and oozing, the two of them strangers. She's grown a beard in solidarity with a dying dog. Wind sandblasted straight to the eye of God. No more moisture, neither kind welcome. Death's infinite return. The universe sucked into its own black hole. Nothingness and nowhere, somewhere on the other side of somethingness. Give thanks for gravity, despite the bags and sags, the drooping down. Gravity, in the end, is our salvation. There on the lip of nowhere, gravity dons unitard and cape and saves the day. That is, saves the universe. Some version of something returns as we bounce higher, farther than the reach of energy and matter. Begin again. There was an old man named Michael Finnegan, dead long ago, but the wait continues. Carnality will resume after this break for station identification. Only the shadow knows for sure. The dying daddy wanted to know, what is love anyway? She wonders, as she wanders through time and space, if he ever knew before his last breath or at any time when young. She wonders, when will the widows ever learn pity is not compassion? A helping hand is not commitment. Lust will die. The first question answered, there is nothing more to say.
You just heard Eternal Return by poet Donna Snyder. She's going to be featured this month during the Barbed Wire Open Mic Series that happens on Saturday, July 30th at 8 p.m. at the Rock House Cafe and Gallery. Snyder will read from your new book, The Tongue Has Its Secrets, a collection of poetry recently published by Neo-Poesies Press. She will be introduced by Irish-American poet professor Lawrence Welsh, formerly of Los Angeles and a resident of El Paso for over 20 years. Here to tell us about The Tongue Has Its Secrets is poet Donna Snyder. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Thank you, Marina. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Eternal Return. Tell us about it.
My poetry comes from a lot of different places, and usually, unless I'm really unlucky writing it, it works on several different levels. And so on one level, Eternal Return is about the relatively new theory in physics that what rather than the heat death of the universe, you know, we fall into a black hole and extinguish, that there, right on the lip of the black hole, gravity pulls the universe back out and it starts all over again, and that time starts all over again and history starts all over again. And then Nietzsche believed in the eternal return as well. But then when you get right down to it, it's about love affair, you know, a love affair, you know, which may or may not have been totally successful.
Well, it sounds about right. You got to go around the block a couple of times, right?
Right. No kidding. Especially at my age, I have. You know?
Well, but let's talk about that because, you know, I was reading about your book and about, you know, what other people have to say. And it's definitely very sexy.
Some people think that. Yeah.
Well, it seems like you do, too. I mean, you're blushing right now.
But... Uh-oh. I didn't know I still blushed.
There seems to be a lot of sexual undertones in there. What's going on there, Donna?
No, I think it's fair to say, and that many people would say, that a very broad vein in my history as a poet has been writing about sexuality, the pleasures of the flesh and not, you know. My writing kind of divides between the political, the overtly political, as well as in this book it does. You know, there are poems about the cell of Grandmother Crow, the Hopi artifact sold in Paris. There are lots of poems about the destruction of the earth and the loss of water and rain and whatnot. There are also a number of poems in this particular book that draw on female archetypes from all over the world. A lot of, you know, Central American, Mexican goddess figures, Navajo theories, Navajo ideas of women archetypes, Grandmother Crow, the Hopi, Grandmother Kachina. And then, of course, I've always written a lot of what's called ekphrastic poetry from visual art. And so there are a number of poems that are a response to great masterpieces through art, like The Birth of Venus by Botticelli, for example. There's an answer to that. There's a poem that talks about a photo lay in Vanity Press years ago by Annie Leibovitz with a very sexy photo shoot of Roseanne Barr.
You know?
And so that poem, for example, combines both my experience in the world, the responses to my physical appearance, as well as the politics of physical appearance and art. So, you know, I hope that my poetry does work on multiple levels. Whatever the initial inspiration is, or like I write a lot, almost everything at Tumbleweeds Project, where someone will give you a theme or a cue or, you know, read you someone else's work and you write just on the spot and read aloud. And I think frequently take whatever external thing is motivating me to write and then filter it through an emotional scrim of personal experience that may or may not be recognized by other people as that being in there. But yes, I do realize that a large number of my poems originate in that physical experience of need and yearning and fulfillment. Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. Do you ever run out of words?
Oh, only when I'm self-censoring, usually, yeah.
So then what do you do with all the words then? Because then I just imagine it's the opposite, right? Like there's all this movement constantly.
Yes,
there
is.
So how do you discipline that and get it down to paper?
Well, it's not always easy to discipline that, especially like at 3 a.m. when you're ruminating and going over and over and over that stupid comment you made when you were 10 or something like that, right? I don't know. Maybe nobody else in the world does that.
I'm sure you have some companions.
Yeah. And so not always is it possible to discipline that flight of thought. The medical profession considers that to be a diagnostic criteria for mental illness.
Well, semantics.
But right? I've convinced my doctor at least that, no, that's creativity in the context of poetry. And so not always can I. That's the beauty of Tumbleweeds, though, is that we're not there competing. And by we is used very loosely because different people come all the time. The most experienced, published, prominent writers to the very, very first time new writers. And the discipline of it, even though the first rule of Tumbleweeds is there are no rules, is that everybody writes, no explanations, no introductions. You write, you stop on a dime and
you're done.
Read it aloud. Yeah. And so that can kind of force a certain level of performance discipline on you. And I've been out of Tumbleweeds a lot lately after 20 some odd years of never missing because of different health issues, basically. And I really miss that constant writing, reading aloud, writing, reading aloud. So that's where it comes from. I can't really say I discipline it. Lots of times when I read my poetry, I'm as much as anyone else going, God, where'd that come from, you know?
Right.
Especially when I find old ones that I never even bothered to type up. I'm like, oh, that's not awful.
Are you able to go back to what you were thinking then when you read them, or is it a whole other new thought?
Not always. Sometimes,
which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, it's a cool thing to, you know, look at something and say, gosh, it's my handwriting. It's my notebook. Who wrote that? And what was she thinking about? But that's kind of cool. You know, that's exciting because I am one of those believers. To go back to your question, really, is that once you put it out there, once you read it aloud or publish it, it's not really yours to say what it means anymore. It's the listener or the reader. And whatever they come up with is what it means, at least for them.
And here you have it, a whole collection, a whole book.
Right. I'm really excited. Neopoiesis Press is out of Vancouver Island in Canada, British Columbia. And they're a very well-regarded small press. They publish people from Wales, Japan, England, all over Canada, all over the U.S. And so I was really thrilled for them to publish my third book of poetry. This is my third book released since 2014. So
very cool. Yeah. And tell us about it, because you'll be reading at Tumblr Words on the 30th, and I'm pretty sure we can acquire a copy if we show up.
You certainly can. It won't be at Tumblr Words that I'll be reading. I'll be reading at the Barbed Wire Open Mic.
That's
downtown,
right,
at the Rock House Cafe and Gallery, which is a very cool venue with music and a lot of things going on. And I'll be reading from it, and hopefully a few people will want one, and I'll sign it for them on the spot.
All you have to do is drop into the Barbed Wire open mic. That's going to happen at the Rock House Cafe and Gallery, and it's on Saturday, July 30th. You'll be hearing poems from Donna's new book, The Tongue Has Its Secrets. Thank you so much for coming to State of the Arts.
Thank you for having me here, Marina.